You know, 10 months ago, we made a decision to redefine our direction. We knew there would be ups and downs this season. We knew that we would encounter some things that were going to be difficult, and we did. With that said, I think we're in a better place today than we were at this time last year. And I think we have an opportunity to grow as an organization starting today.
Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA.
Levine, he goes right. Oh!
Stop it, Sampson! Did you not get the memo?
Hosts Jordan Malley and Matt Peck dive into the best Bulls news and stories around the NBA.
Here's Enes Kanter, what are you doing? The finisher in New York City.
Your number one source for Chicago Bulls news and stories.
We're going to preach patience. Doesn't mean we're not going to be looking for ways to get better, but a lot of it's going to come internally. We need Zach LaVine to be a better basketball player. Chris Dunn to come back a better player. Lauri Markkanen, Bobby Portis, you go down the line. They have to put in the time, and confident that they will.
So kick back, relax, and get ready for the best hour of your day.
Like I said at the beginning, I feel better today about our direction and our position than I did a year ago.
Locked On Bulls. Bulls starts now. Here are your hosts, Jordan Malley and Matt Peck.
What's up and welcome into Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. We're live on Dash Radio, DashRadio.com, and the Dash Radio app. On the Nothing But Net channel, we're live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, 10 a.m. Eastern at 9 a.m. Central Time. I'm your host, Jordan Malley, writer of Bulls basketball in the NBA at LockedOnBulls.com and college hoops over at SB Nation. Along with me is Matt Peck, writer of Bulls basketball in the NBA at LockedOnBulls.com and host of the 312 show on AM 1590 WCGO in Chicago. Follow us on social media on Twitter at Jordan C. Malley, at Bulls underscore Peck, and at LockedOnBulls. Like us on Facebook, Facebook.com/LockedOnShyBulls, and subscribe to the show on iTunes, Android, Stitcher, Google Play, Spotify, and anywhere you find podcasts, you will find us. Make sure you follow the Locked On Podcast Network on Facebook and Twitter as well. Our text and voicemail lines at 331-979-1369. Hopefully everybody enjoyed our mailbag episode yesterday. I feel like our mailbag episodes have been getting better and better every single week, and we appreciate everybody taking the time out to drop us a voicemail or a text message. So you can do that too and be a part of the conversation at 331-979-1369. Matt, welcome back. Things were good yesterday. I felt like our conversations went in a bunch of different directions, so I hope the fans out there enjoyed it. Today we're going to talk a little bit about the developing rules among the NCAA and some of the things that they're doing to try and combat this axing of the one-and-done rule, some of the rules that they're making for high school prospects, and so much more about that. We got a little, we got a voicemail as well about the career of Jamal Crawford and why it got ended, why it ended shortly with the Chicago Bulls. So we'll talk a little bit about that and a few other things in the show. But first and foremost, how you doing, Matt? What's going on?
I'm doing well, Jordan. What's going on, Bulls Nation? Excited for another Bears football Thursday night. Yeah, I know it's preseason, but I'm excited to watch some Bears football. You can laugh at me if you want. I skipped Lala last Thursday because I wanted to watch the Bears, and I'm excited that I get to watch the Bears again. We can talk. I'm excited to talk Bulls and NBA basketball. I'm just saying, Bears football, get excited. Also, check out Locked On Bears.
Mister, I'm going to miss a concert or some, or an event to watch a freaking preseason game.
Damn right. We're about to see Mitch Trubisky get some snaps tonight, dude. I'm ready for it.
Sick. One drive.
Yeah, better than nothing. Better than nothing, man.
So the first thing I want to talk about on today's show is this whole NCAA ruling. And there's a bunch of different things that are going on that have just been released about what the NCAA is going to do for high school prospects. And basically, I guess to start, in short, what I took away from these rulings is basically, first of all, it's not going to happen for maybe 4 or 5 years. None of these rules are going to be in place. A lot of it has to do in contingency with the fact that the NBA is going to take away the one-and-done rule and allow high school prospects to enter the NBA draft right away. What was your main points, I guess, Matt, from this conversation, these new rules, and some of the clarifications that we got yesterday on what might impact some of these young players either going into the NBA or going to the NCAA?
Yeah, I mean, everything we read about this as this news came out yesterday from Woj at ESPN, from people at Yahoo Sports, John Calipari did a quick interview about it. basically everybody said this is a hollow power grab by the NCAA to seize de facto subpoena power and basically control investigations about themselves to try to still have this sham of an institution where college athletes aren't getting paid and there are weird back channels going on. And, well, the NCAA has all the power to investigate this ourselves. So basically, they're just, you know, it's a purely aesthetic, quote unquote, rule change. Really, from what we've heard by all of the Intune analysts, isn't really going to change anything. And you highlighted something that Calipari also said in his interview, which was, look, I was just talking to the head of USA Basketball, and he's saying, dude, pump the brakes. None of this is going to happen until 2021 at the earliest. And it just really seems like NCAA trying to increase their stranglehold on their quasi-moral situation and their quasi-moral high ground right now of being an institution that makes a whole bunch of money off of these players and doesn't pay them anything, and saying, well, here, we're going to give you this little reward, this little gold coin, to say you can now have your returning college eligibility if you go to the NBA draft and don't get drafted. Good for you. Here's that little treat. But, I mean, that's really only going to affect a small percentage of college athletes and college basketball athletes across the board. And the biggest takeaway to me is that the NCAA made this announcement, and USA Basketball and the NBA, the two people it theoretically sat down at a negotiating table with to talk about these changes, both reacted with a, wait, what, huh? Time out. None of this has been agreed to yet. Just seems really irresponsible by the NCAA.
To me, this sounds like the NCAA trying to get out ahead of a lot of the bad and negative situations that have happened, not only in the NCAA basketball realm, but also in college football as well. This is like them getting sort of a step ahead because they knew the NBA was going to go to the one and done rule, take that away. And I feel like that's going to lose product for the NCAA overall. Obviously, you had mentioned that college players still don't get paid. This doesn't really give them an avenue to get paid either. And it's funny because they're making up all of these rules to make it seem like top prospects and even, you know, mid-tier prospects that are coming out of high school, going to the NCAA, wishing for a chance at the NBA, they're making it seem like, oh, you know, we're helping out the top recruits in the that are looking to go to the NBA by
allowing them to have these relationships with agents.
But the funny thing is they already do that.
They already do. Yeah, it's ridiculous. It's just a bald-faced lie and a gross assumption that kind of thing's not already going on. And then the back end part of that, which is even more ludicrous, is the NCAA saying, and we anticipate and assume in good faith that for those players that get an agent coming out of high school or in their first college season before actually declaring for the draft, if they go to the draft and aren't drafted and return to college, because we are now saying that they are eligible to do so, will in good faith terminate those said relationships with those agents, which, I mean, come on. That, A, how are you going to enforce that? And B, there's no way that's happening.
To me, this is just unbelievable. And this has created a lot more problems than I think the NBA and, you know, USA Basketball doesn't want any part of this, you know? Like, having to handpick the top prospects and the elite guys in order to have agents, like, the USA Basketball system doesn't want to do that. Like, they have already said this is a burden that we don't want any part of, and why should we do this to help out the NCAA?
Yeah, and here's the other thing. Like USA Basketball, yeah, they're good at winning gold medals, and they're good at bringing up young talent in, you know, the youth team USA squads of various age levels, and they're good at competing in not just the Olympics but other global tournaments. They do not have the infrastructure to take on something as big as figuring out and handing out the tag of elite prospects and deciding which of them get to have these new prospect agent relationships and which of them get to go into this new, and the NBA is going to have to figure out a new CBA clause for figuring out expanding the NBA combine to make room for all these people. The USA Basketball does not have the infrastructure for this, and also it kind of blindly overlooks the fact that more and more we are getting international young prospects coming into NBA drafts. Look at Shai Gilgeous-Alexander of this 2018 draft. Look at one of the top draft picks projected in 2019, maybe the number one overall, RJ Barrett, another Canadian. What does USA Basketball have to do with evaluating RJ Barrett? It makes no sense to me.
Yeah, me either. And I look at this, and maybe not only is the NCAA scared of the NBA and them taking away the one and done rule now, I think they're also a little bit nervous about the fact that there's these other quasi leagues that are kind of popping up saying, like, okay, we'll pay you. You come and play with us for a year, we'll build up your skills, and you can still go have an NBA career and get paid for what you're doing right now. There's a league that just popped up in Australia that's trying to get prospects to come there for a year and play against professionals. We've seen guys do this before in the past, and the NCAA continues to tiptoe around the actual issue. And that's allowing players to make money off their own likeness. Okay, it's one thing if you don't want to pay the players. We already know staunchly the NCAA does not want to do that. Fine. You don't want to do that? Let players make their money off their own damn likeness. Like, I always go back to this case last year, the one that we heard about in the NCAA in college football. It's the one about the kicker on UCF who had the YouTube channel with, you know, I think over 100,000 subscribers on it. And the NCAA looked at that and said, well, you know what? No, you can't use your own likeness in a YouTube channel to make your own money. So they took away his D1 scholarship just because he wanted to keep his YouTube channel up, because he was actually making good money from that. And the NCAA kicked him off the team, took away his D1 scholarship, and then tried to fight him in court for it. So how can you have things like this going on? And how about recently, too? You know, the NCAA is trying to make it look like they're the ones here saying, okay, we're trying to help out these prospects and try to find a better avenue for them to get paid. But at the same time, you just suspended four players on a football team at UNC for selling their kicks, because frankly, these guys are broke, and would you rather be wearing $3,000 on your feet or having that in your pocket? Like, as a broke college kid, I would have taken that any day of the week. So it's a little condescending and a little contradictory of what they're doing when you flip it to college football and you see all these guys getting suspended for trying to make money off their own likeness. And in the grand scheme of things, does it really hurt the NCAA at all? Absolutely not. So this is why these rulings just make absolutely zero sense to me.
And one other one before we move on from this topic. There's been a lot of really good analytical articles written about this just in the last 24 hours from a lot of different outlets. I would highly suggest that all y'all go out there and read a piece from Sam Vicenni for The Athletic, where he uses the example of Buddy Hield in one of the other really weird and unknowable variables right now, which is that under the current NBA rules and CBA rules, if this new go to the draft, get undrafted, and return as a college-eligible player and play another season holds firm, then it would totally throw the current NBA system draft system out of whack. The example of Buddy Hield being that as a junior at Oklahoma, he was a good prospect, a Big 12 player of the year, but was not projected to be a lottery player. He was projected to be like a mid-second round talent. Returns to Oklahoma his senior year and then blows up and has a monstrous year, you know, wins National College Basketball Player of the Year in a lot of different ways, makes a big noise for Oklahoma in the tourney, and all of a sudden his draft stock skyrockets and ends up being what I think it was like the sixth overall pick in the 2016 draft. So the example is, say Buddy Hield declared in 2015, went undrafted, and could have done so by saying, you know what, I'm only going to take the 1 year non-guaranteed as opposed to the full rookie deal, which is in each draftee's rights, and went undrafted because no team wanted to commit to a guy who was only going to sign a 1 year non-guarantee, goes back, and all of a sudden is much more valuable. He would then hypothetically re-enter in 2016 to the NBA, not as a draft prospect, but as a unrestricted free agent who went undrafted the year prior. So if you mix what the NBA rules are now with this proposed rule change from the NCAA, you're talking about a kid who went undrafted, is a late bloomer, goes back to school, has a huge blow-up year, and then all of a sudden can come in as an unrestricted free agent, no bird rights for the team that takes him, and is getting way more money than the average rookie. That's a problem.
Yeah, that's pretty ridiculous, and that's a really good point, too, and I think this has caused just an unbelievable mess in the NBA. I even look at, too, like, he brought up the case of Buddy Hield, but what about the case of, like, even looking back at Chicago Bulls players, like, what about Chris Dunn? I look at Chris Dunn's 4 years at Providence. He started 18 games his freshman year, and his stats were nowhere near as good as his senior year. Like, you look at him, he won back-to-back Big East Player of the Year. Had he qualified to go to the NBA a year prior in his junior year, I think the same case would have sort of been made the same way we're making it for Buddy Hield. Would have Chris Dunn been a lottery pick regardless? So I think this case holds true to more players than maybe we think. And the consequences of it happening, I think, is going to make a huge mess for the NBA that they don't really necessarily want. So I think there's a lot more issues with this NCAA ruling, and maybe they're trying to mask it with saying that, oh, this is going to end up being good, not only for our product, but good for the players. And look at what we're doing to try and help these guys out. When in reality, this doesn't really move the needle at all in terms of helping the overall growth of every NCAA player or people that are going to college and trying to make money, not just the elite prospects, because the elite prospects are always going to find a way to make their money, and they're always going to be taken care of, right? It's the guys that are in tier two, tier three, tier four that we're talking about. So very interesting.
It's just a giant mess.
It really,
man,
is.
It's at this new rule change sequence that the NCAA just announced, like, it's not going to solve anything. It's just them trying to seize more power and passing the buck to other, to USA and NBA, and it's not going to help anyone.
We got to take a short break here on Locked On Bulls, but when we come back, we've got a bunch of interesting stories, one specifically from Jamal Crawford, as well as we're going to talk about the NBA schedule being released, at least the opening week of the schedule, Christmas Day, and also MLK Day. We'll talk a little bit about that and so much more. Stay right here with us at Locked On Bulls. Be back in 60 seconds. All right, back here on Locked On Bulls. Remember, you can hit us up if you want to be a part of the conversation. If you've got some thoughts, if you've got a question about this NCAA ruling and how it's going to impact the NBA, if you want to jump in the conversation, hit us up at 331-979-1369 or hit us up on Twitter at Locked On Bulls, at Jordan C. Malley, and at Bulls underscore Peck. All right, Matt, before we get to the Jamal Crawford voicemail, I want to talk to you about opening week and what it means for the Bulls to be back on national TV after just 1 year of a rebuild. They'll be opening up against the 76ers on the road on TNT, as well as no Christmas game this year, but will in fact be playing on MLK Day against the Cleveland Cavaliers. Opening night, not even just for the Bulls, but in terms of the NBA in general, how do you feel seeing the opening week schedule and any early matchups that you kind of got your eyes on?
I think they did a pretty solid job with opening night. Obviously you have Celtic Sixers, which, you know, most people we'll see what Kawhi does and if he's healthy and what that means for the Raptors, who were actually, you know, the best team in the East this past season up until the playoffs. But Sixers Celtics, everybody is saying that they're the two best teams in the East. You got them going head to head, and then of course OKC Warriors, going to be a shootout. You got the whole Russ versus KD thing. Like, that's an awesome job. It's not that hard to get the opening night lineup correct. I guess maybe some people would say, well, how come you don't have LeBron and the new look Lakers playing on opening night? I don't think that's necessary. I mean, I like the opening night lineup that you have right there. And as for the Bulls, Thursday, October 18th, at those very same Sixers on TNT. Point of clarification, and I got really excited about the TNT Bulls when I saw the schedule yesterday and started tweeting about it, and it's been so long that I'd already forgotten. The TNT Bulls streak is only for home games on TNT, and this is a Bulls at Philly game, so it doesn't technically qualify, but I'm suggesting we start new rules for the TNT Bulls, especially if they win this upset at Philly on opening night, to start including road games, because we had a full season where the Bulls had no games on TNT, only one nationally televised game in 82, and it was on ESPN, not TNT. So I'm saying if the Bulls somehow find a way to miraculously beat the Sixers on opening night or on their opening night, I think we should start including road games in the TNT streak because we miss an entire year of TNT Bulls. It's time to bring it back.
I would just miss it for being able to watch a full night and also including the little nugget that the Chicago Bulls will be playing on there. But I miss, you know, NBA on TNT. I think everybody misses that as well. The show with Shaq, Kenny, and all of them, Ernie Johnson. So I'm excited for that to come back. I'm glad the Bulls are playing in the first week on national TV. It's kind of crazy, though, that they picked the Bulls to play on national TV in the opening week. But maybe people want to see, you know, Jabari Parker, Zach LaVine, Lauri Markkanen, and possibly Wendell Carter Jr. I think the one thing that I take away from this is instead of TNT Bulls being revitalized like a lot of people were yesterday talking about it, how about the Bulls during the rebuild are 1-0 on nationally televised games? The one game that you were referencing, we were actually at, the Timberwolves-Bulls game at the United Center, Jimmy Butler's coming home game, and the Bulls ended up pulling out the win, and actually that was probably Zach LaVine's best game.
I was going to say, LaVine's best game was a Bull. He put up 36, I think, to Butler's 34, or it was something like that, but Butler and LaVine were going back and forth in that fourth quarter. It was an awesome game to be at. I remember a shout out to our buddy Robert, who won the contest that we took to that game. Robert and his dad, we had a great time, and we were sitting there at halftime, and I think the Bulls were down by, I don't know, like a dozen or so, and we were like, all right, where's this going from here? Are the Bulls going to keep it close? We're going to end up losing by 20 plus, and it was really exciting. I think everybody in that building knew that the Bulls were supposed to be tanking, but the madhouse was really loud and into that game. Do you think we get? So we know that we got at least one opening week on TNT. Do you think we got at least one more nationally televised game with this exciting young core with a fully healthy Zach LaVine and the addition of Jabari? Well, like, what would you put the over-under at for the Bulls in nationally televised games? By the way, that full schedule gets released tomorrow, Friday afternoon.
Just to preface that really quick, they can switch up what national games that they do, right, throughout the season. That's kind of flat. Like, they'll have a set schedule, but if they need to flex for a team that's maybe playing really well and they want to go to a national game, they can do that, correct?
Yeah. I don't think they exercise that all that often, but in scenarios, especially getting closer and closer to games that have playoff implications, they can and will do that.
I got to imagine that at least one game that's going to be nationally televised is the Bulls-Bucks, right? Bulls going to Milwaukee, playing in their new stadium. Jabari Parker's return to Milwaukee for the first time. Like, would you? Maybe it's not even the first time.
Because the only nationally televised game the Bulls got last season was against Jimmy and Tibbs. Like, is that kind of your line of thought there?
Yeah, and the Milwaukee Bucks will be
pretty good.
Sort of
a reunion game. Yeah, I mean, Giannis himself is a huge marquee drawing, even if Milwaukee's not a big market. I think part of the reason that even when the Bulls are mediocre at best, that they get a lot of nationally televised games is because Chicago's a huge market and there are Bulls fans everywhere. It's a huge fan base. So I think that, coupled with the addition, the exciting splash signing of Jabari, and the fact that Markkanen made first team all rookie last year, and Zach LaVine's on a new contract and has a lot of things to prove and is playing his first fully healthy season since his ACL tear. It's a more exciting core, and as you and I were talking about yesterday, certainly a more exciting starting five on paper than the starting five that the Bulls tried out last season, which they did not get an opening week nationally televised game for, which is no surprise. But again, for the second straight year, the Bulls don't get a Christmas Day game, but I have no complaints because that Christmas Day lineup is awesome. Jordan, do you like it as much as I do?
Yeah, I like it too, but I've seen people pretty negative about it. Like, the fact that Kristaps Porzingis won't be back even in time for that Christmas game, people are talking about that.
But I don't mind, because let's be real, some of Giannis's biggest games as a coming out superstar have been at the Garden.
That's true.
I'm stoked. Like, obviously that matchup would be even better if the Unicorn was involved and it was the Freak versus the Unicorn. But even if Kristaps is not playing, Giannis goes crazy at the Garden. So it's going to be entertaining.
Yeah, I'm never disappointed. I just like the fact that there is a lineup from like 11 a.m. or 12 p.m. right in the mid-afternoon to all the way up to nighttime. So regardless of who is playing, I'm always excited. I think a lot of NBA fans out there feel the same way. I think the only disappointment I have here, and maybe it's not really a disappointment at all, but I feel like the Bulls games, if they do end up playing on Christmas, usually it's like they play the early game, and I don't know. I'd rather be able to sit there and watch the Bulls play, you know, one of these nightcaps, and that might not even be able to happen until they're good again. But I'm not disappointed. I just think that there are criticisms about why the NBA scheduled it the way that they did and maybe leaving some teams off that they should have capitalized on Christmas Day. But I'm not mad. Like, any time you can get a lineup of five games straight in a row on a holiday, like, can't be too mad about that. So,
I mean, So we touched on Bucks Knicks, which is the first one. Then you got Thunder Rockets. So you have the freshly re-signed PG and Russ going against CP3, Harden, and now Melo. Like, that's a bunch of marquee stars all in one game. Then you got Sixers Celtics again. To me, that's kind of lazy. You have Sixers Celtics opening night. You do it again on Christmas, and you don't even switch up home and away. It's Sixers on the road and Boston at home on opening night and on Christmas. But then, I mean, Lakers-Warriors, you get LeBron versus Steph and KD and the Warriors. It's awesome. And then the nightcap, I really like. Blazers-Jazz, that's a great West Coast nightcap.
Yeah, Blazers-Jazz will be fun. Obviously, Lakers-Golden State-Warriors is going to be a whole hell of a lot of fun. And yeah, like you said, 76ers and the Boston Celtics, let's knock on wood that both teams can stay healthy at that point, too. I think that would be the only thing that would kind of ruin some of these matchups if people get injured. But certainly, I'm not hating on the lineup at all. I think it's going to be good, especially even if you just look at the Lakers and Golden State Warriors. That game trumps everything, for me at least, as an NBA fan.
It'll be great. Wait, okay, so we never answered this. Over-under on number of nationally televised games the Bulls get when we see the full schedule tomorrow. I'm setting that. I'm thinking maybe like 3.5.
Oh, wow. I was going to go more than that, actually.
Really?
Yeah, because think about it. If they're going to be on national TV on opening night, I've got to imagine that, you know, maybe we're sitting somewhere around 6 games as the over-under. And that's a lot of games for this Bulls team, but maybe they want...
I'm just saying, and like, I got a lot of flack on Twitter from this when I said it's, you know, whether or not you want to talk about the TNT Bulls, which this doesn't technically qualify for. It's crazy to think that the Bulls, this Bulls squad that was a lottery team last year, and people are not only ESPN analysts and experts, but Vegas are predicting them to be the third or fourth worst team in the league, gets a nationally televised game on opening week. So to me, like, we got one last year, and it just so happened to be in the middle of the season. Wasn't it like, it was like January or February? I think it was like early February, that Bulls Wolves game.
February 9th.
Yeah, there you go. So and maybe the Bulls get one again this year. I'm thinking they're not going to only get one. I think because of the Parker addition and the way that Markkanen flashed as a rookie, they're probably going to get a little bit more this year. But I'm not saying like 7. I think I would be surprised if you set the over under at 6.5 nationally televised games for these Bulls. I'd take the under.
I would probably too. I think six is hard because that's like right where I'm at. Oh man, that would be like one a month,
and especially if they don't get a Christmas Day one, because that's usually one of the ones you can always rely on. The Bulls get being one of those nationally televised games, because up until the rebuild and the tank, the Bulls were like a perennial Christmas Day participant.
Does the NBA do New Year's Eve too and New Year's Day games as well? Because that could be a point where the Bulls maybe make New Year's Eve lineup or the New Year's Day lineup too as well. So be interesting to see what goes on there. But I would say probably...
Because like your example of maybe the Bulls Bucks get a nationally televised game, which, you know, there are four of them. It seems reasonable that at least one of them would be because of the... You got the Greek Freak and you also have the Jabari... Now home in Chicago versus his old team storyline, kind of like Jimmy and the Bulls last season. But how many other similar kind of storylines as a reason for putting that game on national television can you think of with this young Bulls team? Because to me, there really aren't any. What, like Wendell Carter Jr. and the Bulls going up against Marvin Bagley and the Kings?
That was the other one I
like,
was thinking.
Who wants to watch Bulls Kings on national television?
No.
Nobody outside of Bulls fans and Kings fans. Nobody.
That's why I asked you if this team does play really well at the first 2 months of the season, can they flex some of these national games that maybe teams are either hurt or they just don't turn out to be as good as maybe we anticipated at the beginning of the season. I was wondering if either ESPN or TNT can flex some of their games and say, you know what, no, the Bulls are playing better. We're going to go and make them a nationally televised game instead of this one. I've seen it in the past, but like you said, I don't think that happens too often. So maybe
I don't see the Bulls being a team that is so surprisingly exciting that they're a team that gets flexed into nationally televised games. And I'm sorry that that sounds a little pessimistic. I'm just being real. I'm just being rational. I don't see the Bulls, if they're a pleasant surprise and all of a sudden the Bulls go on this crazy run in the middle of the season and are in position to be a playoff team in the East, yeah, maybe they get flexed into one or two more nationally televised games. I don't think that is a very likely scenario.
So if we're going six, I'm probably going to go under. I'm going to say the Bulls have five nationally televised games this season, and I don't know. I still look at it, the marketing aspect of it too. Like the Chicago Bulls are a huge brand. And as much as the NBA looks at the talent on the floor, they also look at the branding and how big this fan base is too. So I wouldn't put that out of the realm of possibility as well, especially because the Bulls have basically, without saying it, have said that they're pretty much done tanking, that they're looking to try and compete now. And the signings that they did this summer, re-signing LaVine and signing Parker to the one-year deal, says to a lot of people that they're going to try to compete rather than to try to tank. And so, to me, I don't know, maybe the NBA's marketing team looks at that and says, you know what, regardless of how good the talent is here, we have a lot of people that'll tune in no matter what.
I just thought of another one, Jordan. Another reason for national television game grudge match, the Chicago Bulls against David Nwaba and his Cleveland Cavaliers. Boom.
We're already getting that on MLK Day, though.
There you go. That's true. But is it going to be nationally televised is the question.
Oh,
because
yeah, that's true.
I was looking at the MLK lineup for whichever it was, ESPN or TNT, that have those MLK games, and the Bulls Cavs are not listed. That's on their schedule, but it's not listed as one of the nationally televised games.
I think another fun one would be Knicks and Bulls at some point on national TV, and that's, they have to have Kristaps Porzingis back, because remember last year when Lauri Markkanen just went off, like we were talking about Giannis, like Lauri Markkanen went absolutely off at the Garden last year.
Oh yeah, that was the finishers coming out party at the Garden. It's like young stars emerging on the Garden stage is always a great nationally televised game, even if the two teams involved aren't that great.
To me, that would be fun if Kristaps is back and healthy, and then you get round two of him versus Markkanen, and I think you could build that up into a nationally televised game as well. So interesting, and we'll talk about tomorrow's schedule if it comes out by the time we record. Hopefully it does. We'll be able to talk about this more in depth and kind of see exactly what the schedule looks like, what's going to be the most difficult month for this Bulls team looking forward, and where they might be able to snag maybe a few games here or there, and see how many national televised games that they actually do have. We got to take another short break here on Locked On Bulls. We come back, we're wrapping it up with one voicemail in particular about a Bulls team back in the early 2000s and why a certain move was made and ultimately how it impacted the Bulls going forward. So stay right here with us at Locked On Bulls. Be back in 60 seconds.
Greetings, Jordan, Matt, and other assorted Bulls citizens. This is DVS. I figured I'd give you guys a break without calling in every week and asking asinine questions. But listening to the back podcast, there's something that came up that I don't really think gets talked about enough, and that is really Jamal Crawford's tenure with the Bulls. I remember back during that 2000 and 2004 stretch when the Bulls were just abysmal, and what they really needed to do was have somebody cut loose. Now, I understood that one of those was his second year his season was cut short, but I always was upset because Crawford had all of the tools to actually run the point. They kept trying to shoot him into the shooting guard position, which I understand because he was, he still is a specialist in the league to this day. But I always was upset that the Bulls never, like Cartwright never like cut him loose and said, okay, let me let this guy just learn the point guard range. Because I felt like he had the tools with that length and with that scoring ability to really change the franchise. And of course, after 4 years with the Bulls, they traded him for Charleston Shoe and two packs of Juju Bees. But I really wanted to talk about his tenure, and we really don't look at that as like one of the big failures of our front office. Once again, love the show. Y'all take it easy. Peace.
Back here on Locked On Bulls, thanks again to DBS for dropping us another great voicemail. This is an interesting one because we've been dabbling here and there in the history of the Bulls, especially like the Baby Bulls era. And even back into the 90s, we've been doing this all summer long. And so this is an interesting one, I think, gets overlooked, like DBS was saying. So Matt, going back and doing some research on Jamal Crawford and exactly what the Bulls got in this deal, I have to start with the fact that Jamal Crawford signed a 7-year, $56 million contract back then and then got traded to the Knicks. But you think about that broken up over 7 years, that contract is equivalent to what Cristiano Felicio is making right now, $8 million per year. And so that was out of a lot of funny different parts of researching this deal and what ended up happening. I think that, to start, was one of my favorite parts of it. It's like Jamal Crawford, think about the career he's had, and he was getting paid at that time just as much as Cristiano Felicio now.
Yeah, I mean, let's also be real that the NBA salary cap and inflation, right, all right, that right. is not so, like, if you magnified that by what NBA players are making in the 17-18 season with inflation and all that, that contract for its time was a pretty darn big contract. And that was really the reason that the Bulls didn't keep him. You go back and look at some of the quotes from the front office, in particular John Paxson, who at that time was only a couple years into the job. The reason for letting Jamal Crawford go is that, you know, obviously we value Jamal. He's a great young player. He's a great scorer. But the Bulls were looking at what they were going to have to do and what kind of money they were going to have to give him to keep him. And they had just recently brought the Twin Towers, Tyson Chandler and Eddie Curry, into the fold, and their plan was to build around them. That was the plan at the time. They were still kids on rookie deals. Crawford was going to cost them an arm and a leg to keep, and they decided, true to Bulls front office form, hey, let's maintain our cap flexibility here. And you go back and look at the trade that actually happened with the Bulls and the Knicks. The Bulls sent Crawford and Jerome Williams to the New York Knicks for Othella Harrington, Frank Williams, Dikembe Mutombo, and Cesare Trebanski. And the funny thing is that Paxson spoke at length about how excited they were to add a veteran presence like Mutombo to their young team. And Mutombo didn't play a single minute for the Bulls. They turned around and traded him to Houston later that summer.
The other thing that I took away from this, but before I bring that up, you talked about like the scale as far as what the salary cap was back then and now what it is now. So back in 2004, 2005, the NBA announced that the salary cap was, this is going to shock a lot of young fans too, $43.87 million was the salary cap limit in the NBA in 2004, 2005. Think about that.
Jump change.
Think about
Jump
that.
Jump change.
So Jamal Crawford's $8 million per year was actually 18.23% of what the Bulls salary cap would have been had they not traded him. You think about that in today's era, that's basically equivalent to what Zach LaVine's getting paid. You know, think about the percentage mm-hmm. of salary cap. Zach LaVine at $19.5 million, and the salary cap being right around $100 million. It's $19.5 million, or 19.5%. So it's about equivalent to what Jamal Crawford was getting back then. Matt, I told you this before the show, that the funniest thing that I got from this is like, if you took the quote from the first quote from John Paxson in this article back from 2004 and you placed it in a 2018 article, I would have not known the difference. Listen to this quote real fast. Obviously, Jamal is the best player in this deal, and it's not easy giving up young talent like that, Bulls general manager John Paxson said. The way that we looked at it is there were certain things we needed to get. We had to get substantial financial relief, and this gives us some flexibility. There's our favorite buzzword of all time. 14 years in the making, flexibility, even talking about that back in 04, 05. So the Bulls ended up saving $18 million in cap space. So this is pretty classic in terms of the Bulls always wanting to save money. And it was true back then in 04 and 05. But I guess DVS's question here is, what kind of impact do you think Jamal Crawford could have had on this team? Should they have kept him around? You know, Kirk Heinrich was just coming off his rookie year. So they added Luol Deng and Ben Gordon that summer. You had Eddie Curry and Tyson Chandler on that team. You could pretty much round it out to a starting five if you would have kept Jamal Crawford, but instead the Bulls needed, quote unquote, needed the salary cap relief, saving that $18 million. But what do you think Jamal Crawford's career would have been should he have stayed with the Chicago Bulls for that long-term deal, 7 years, $56 million?
I mean, especially considering that the baby Bulls didn't have a whole lot else going for them at the time, it's possible that Crawford could have turned himself into even more of a scoring star than he became. I mean, like, in the prime of his career, and even in the latter stages of his career, so let's see, his highest point scoring season was his final one with the Knicks, which is the team he went to after the Bulls, at 20.6 points per game in 07-08. But right around there for the next several seasons, 19-7, 19-6, 19-7, 18, and that's between the a split season with the Knicks and the Warriors, and then he was with the Atlanta Hawks for a couple of those years. And then with the Clippers years, and he started to play more of a bench role, it, you know, we're seeing it slide down 16, back up to 18, down to 15, down to 14. And then last year as a bench guy, solely a bench guy for the Timberwolves, just 10.3 points per game. I think Crawford could have been a 20 points per game scorer over several seasons with the Bulls had they decided to keep him easily. I mean, the guy is still playing in the league. The latest we've heard is that the Sixers are interested, and maybe also the Warriors. He declined the player option for the second year of his Minnesota deal, but he came in 2000. It's 2018, and the guy is still considered one of the best bench pieces in the league, and the, you know, 18th season of his career. That's really impressive. And considering the Bulls didn't have any elite scorers, they said, we want to build around Tyson and Eddie. If they had decided to keep those two and also keep Crawford and just pay him a lot of money, it's not like Tyson or Eddie were bigger scorers or better scorers than Jamal Crawford was. If they kept him on that team, he was going to be the primary scorer. As you saw, his final year with the Bulls, he averaged 17.3 points per game on that 03-04 team. And it was only going to go up from there. I wonder all the time what would happen if the Bulls kept Jamal Crawford, because I really liked young Jamal Crawford. And we've seen the player that he has become, well-respected across the league and still one of the most efficient scorers even into his late 30s.
Honestly, it scares me a little bit when I go back and read some of these quotes from Paxson all the way back in 04 and 05 when you still had Tyson on this team, you still had Eddie Curry on this team. And just reading some of these quotes are eerily similar to what they've been saying over the last 2 years in this rebuild. Like, it's kind of scary at that point. And maybe they learned their lesson from the Tyson Chandler, Eddie Curry days, and maybe things are different. But the way that they're verbalizing it is very scary and very similar. Like, listen to this one. It's difficult to win with a young basketball team, Paxson said. The concern right now is we are a young backcourt. I keep telling everybody we talk so much about Jamal, but our hopes hinge on Tyson Chandler's health and Eddie Curry's developments. Does that sound similar to anybody that we have on this team right now? Concerning somebody with health and also with somebody else's development? I'm not saying, I'm just saying, man. There was also another quote, too, just real quick, talking about the fact that they brought Dikembe Mutombo in to be sort of a mentor to these two big guys. And this final quote from Paxson kills me. I just know Dikembe through other people. The one thing I know about him is he's a true professional, Paxson said. He's been around the league and seen a lot of things, and he has a great positive attitude about this business. It's going to be wonderful thing for our young guys to learn from him. And then you, as well as a lot of other Bulls fans, know that he didn't even play in a single game for the Bulls. He was shipped off to the Houston Rockets. So, little bit of hypocriticalness in this deal, more so to save money than anything else, because look at the other players that they got in that deal. None of them were even worthy of a Bulls spot or a Bulls roster. And I think it's kind of funny that they traded and wanted Dikembe Mutombo to come in and develop some of these guys and help them mentor. And I'm wondering if they kept him on the roster for a few years, how that might have impacted Tyson Chandler's career with the Bulls, and also Eddie Curry, too. Talking about one of the all-time greats at the center position, to be able to mentor two guys that you thought were going to be the cornerstones of your team. It's just playing that game of what if, you know?
Yeah, Exactly. The other part of DVS's thoughts and question that I thought was interesting was the Jamal Crawford, young Jamal Crawford as a point guard versus young Jamal Crawford as a shooting guard. Obviously, 03-04, that roster, the final year that Jamal Crawford played for the Bulls before he was shipped to New York, had a very young Kirk Heinrich on it, who was by every, you know, by every sense of the word, a true point guard. Gennaro Pargo was also on that roster. I always saw Crawford as more of a shooting guard than a point guard. And in his in that most successful season statistically for the Bulls, when he started, you know, however many games it was, I think he started like 80. He was primarily a shooting guard. And I think that that's where played 80, started 73, which was a big leap the season before he only started 31. I think Crawford has always been best suited as a shooting guard. He can handle the ball. He's got good ball handling skills, but he's never been a true point guard. I've always seen Crawford as a shooting guard, and in the middle and latter stages of his career, that's certainly where he's
I think
thrived.
The funniest thing, too, and the thing to not knock the Bulls on is they did make a good move in 2000 on draft night where they swapped the 7 and 8 pick in order to get Jamal Crawford. So they didn't give up too much. They also gave up cash considerations, or they got cash considerations back for moving down one spot and flip-flopping picks. But they ended up with him in 2000, and I think that was a good move by the Bulls. But then they turned around 4 years later and traded him for basically nothing. So, oh, you did get an Illini star, though, that ended up turning out to be nothing, Jerome Williams. So, yeah, so much for that. But I think the one thing I took away from this research and diving back into some of the quotes was just the fact that one thing has stayed the same, the way that they talk to the media and the way that they talk about players on this team, and just some of the words and the buzzwords that they use are still similar 14 years later. So
yeah, and those comments from Paxson explaining the Crawford trade about maintaining cap flexibility or getting some cap flexibility back and how useful that is. In recent years and younger Bulls fans, that is a phrase that they believe belongs to Gar Forman, and it is a Gar Forman catchphrase that gets everybody all ticked off, because in a lot of interviews he was doing before the Bulls kind of put him on the public media outlet back burner, he kept using that magic phrase of financial flexibility or cap flexibility. He stole that line from Paxson. Back in these days, Gar was already on board as head scout and then director of player personnel when Paxson took over in 2003. He was already on board, but he wasn't made GM until 2009 or 10 or whatever that was. The whole maintaining and putting a high value on cap flexibility and financial flexibility, Bulls fans today know that as a Gar Formanism. He just learned it from Paxson.
Interesting little walk down memory lane and the what ifs that could have happened with that baby Bulls team. And, you know, a few moves here and there could have probably shaped and changed the way that Bulls team looked and how competitive they actually could have been, considering Jamal Crawford went on to still now be being still at this point, 14 years later, still playing in the NBA, which is an amazing accomplishment by him. So, yes, very, very interesting. Thanks again to DVS for the call. Appreciate that. Always great conversation. If you guys want to send us questions, you want to be a part of the conversation that we had on today's episode or anything that we've talked about this week, hit us up at 331-979-1369. Hit us up on Twitter as well, at Locked On Bulls, at Jordan C. Malley, and at Bulls _ Peck, or like us on Facebook, facebook.com/LockedOnShyBulls. But that's going to about do it here on Locked On Bulls. We're live on Dash Radio, DashRadio.com, and the Dash Radio app. On the Nothing But Net channel, we're live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central Time. Make sure you're following the Locked On Podcast Network on Facebook and Twitter as well. Our friends over at Locked On Cubs and Locked On Bears, go give them a subscribe, a like, and a follow on Twitter as well. For Matt Peck, I'm Jordan Malley. Bulls Nation, have a wonderful day. We'll be back tomorrow, Friday, to drive you into the weekend. For Jordan and Matt, we are out. Deuces.
Locked On Bulls, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA. Hosts Jordan Malley and Matt Peck dive into the best Bulls news and stories around the NBA. Locked On Bulls is live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, starting at 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central. For more content and to stay up to date, head over to LockedOnBulls.com, part of FanRag Sports.